There's rebellion in the wind.
A new world order. A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun? Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
Avenge me! Avenge me!
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all points bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order.
Attention. Attention.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Touch Jones, Jones.
Radio program.
And now for something completely different.
Hello, 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 as I tilt my microphone down. You are listening to Stronghold Radio, coming to you somewhere in Central from somewhere in Central California. If you tuned in before the show started, you were hearing Warland there with he wasn't really doing the voice of Jefferson; he was doing the bagpipes of Jefferson. So thank you for doing that, and I appreciate you doing that and playing the music. And it's nice just to have a little diversity on here. And today is what, the 27th of April? Am I right about that?
It's the 26th.
26th of April? It's 26th April 2011. And as Lou's trying to unbraid his headphones here. Let's see here. Wait, hang on, Lou. Don't pull on anything. Okay, here. Let me plug this in here. And then this should, if all goes as planned, electrocute him. Oh, dang, it didn't work. But if you don't hear the hum in the background, you know we're not at Camp Kuya. We're doing what we can with what we've got, and we're on the road, and we're sitting here with three TV trays and huddled in a small dark room in the back of the house. We've got our weapons on, our tactical gear on, and we're doing the show because we don't know when that knock's going to come at the door. No, it's not that dramatic. I don't live like that. I live my life pretty much normally, just my eyes wide open. And I want to thank you for tuning in. We're going to bring you a little bit more of Christian Militant Worldview. And today being Tuesday, I talked to Steve Klein. We've got a bunch of stuff to talk about. He's going to be here at 6 o'clock. There will be 2 hours today, even though I'm drooling now. I know, I'm working on it. Stinking numbness. So we'll be talking to him. In the first hour, we're going to talk about a couple different things. And if all goes as planned, we'll hear a call from someone from the past. Somebody who used to listen to us about 2 years ago that stopped listening and is coming back. And we'll see what that person has to say. I don't want to give out his name. See if you guys can identify him when he calls in. I told him to call in at about 6:15 when I'm done with my daily diatribe. Weird weather all across America. Another sign that you should be prepared, and you shouldn't just have all your stuff in a closet in the house, because if a tornado comes through and takes out your house, or 18 feet of water comes out of the Ohio or the Mississippi and floods all your gear, what are you going to do? Good learning curve. Teachable moment for you people. And of course I react the same way. It's like, if you live on the Mississippi River, you should just have a houseboat in the backyard always moored. And when the time comes, you just go live in the houseboat until the river goes down. I don't understand the mentality. One thing that was surprising, did you see that the Army Corps of Engineers is going to blow one of the levees? They're going to blow it up just like they did down at Katrina in the farmland to save the cities? Why does that always happen? Last I checked, the water was breaching over the top anyway, so I don't think they have to blow it, but... bad times, bad weather, harsh weather, tornadoes, flooding, wildfires in Texas. We don't need the New World Order, the Chinese, the Muslims, or anybody to come in here to give you a good reason to have your family be prepared. Those things are in and of itself enough, the things that could happen any day, not to mention economic crisis. Why aren't you wearing your headphones, Lou? We go through all that trouble and you're not wearing your headphones. Does that hurt your little head? Hurt your head? he's over there crying and nodding. Yeah, it hurts my head. But so take that as a kick in the pants, those of you that are still in a state that's not under calamity right now. If you live in California, you should always be doing it just because of the different seasons we have. Riot season, fire season. What else do we have? Thug season, gang season. We've got enough reasons here. Earthquake season, landslide season. Huh? Right, I already said riot season, didn't I? We have two riot seasons. One in the spring, one in the fall. So it's kind of weird that way. Yeah, it's always thug season here, Warland says in the chat room. Those of you that are listening, I want to thank you for tuning in. If you're a pod person, you know, that's cool. But if you're live, check out the chat room. Go to dutchjones.info and get in the chat room. And it's always good to be in there, and you can check stuff out. Oh, I've got all kinds of stuff going on here. Oh, I'm getting comments. I have an admission to make. Probably, I can't remember the year, and I don't know if you're listening, the person I'm about to comment on. I'm not doing this to be mean, but I was the best man at a Jewish wedding in Atlanta several years ago. And it turns out the only reason I was chosen is he didn't want to make any of his Jewish friends mad by choosing one over the other. But he's popped up again on my Facebook page, and I've put a lot here. And I posted some stuff on Zionism and some videos, and he just sent me an email that says, I think we may be done here. But doesn't really like it. Jewish supremacism is Israeli racism, really. Not impressed with the truthtellers.org. I think we may be done here. Well, if you're listening, and, you know, I didn't even know you were a practicing Jew, but I'm sorry. I'm not going to feign from the truth because I want to be friends with someone that's Jewish. In fact, I care so much for my few people that I've met that are Jewish that I want to share with them the truth so that they will turn over to the gospel of Jesus Christ and repent. So little personal moment there as I'm getting a lot of, though I wouldn't say this was hate mail. Andy, if you're listening, I don't consider it hate mail. I'm just sorry that you can't take the truth there. So sorry. And if we're done, we're done. I've lost more friends in the last 2 years, haven't I, Stace? Because I've taken a stance on a lot of these issues. Catholics, Jews, military guys that don't want to admit the government's, you know, doing what they're doing. It's just weird. But that's what happens when we make a stand for Jesus Christ and for liberty, isn't it? And I'm sure you folks that are listening have heard the same types of things coming from your friends. Like, really? You really believe that? Oh, great. Here we go. You know, that's just too bad. I've been getting hate mail from Muslims today. First, they were sending it to me in Arabic. Then they sent it to me in Hebrew. And Lou showed me how to use, what was it, translator.google.com. Translator.google.com, and I put it in there, and they were like, it was funny because they were accusing me of being a Zionist, and I'm like, and what they were sending me was that they were going to destroy Israel, and that Israel is vile, and I'm like, yeah, go ahead, I'm no friend of Israel, why are you sending this to me? So they started sending me this pro-Muslim stuff, and then I'm like, whoa, wait, there's only one thing I dislike more than Zionist, and I go, That's cowardly, scum-sucking Islamists. And they started getting tons of hate mail. And I had to translate it all. So then when I found that, I was translating it back to them and writing them in Arabic. Great things like, you know, your cowardly people will die horrible death like women on the battlefield. I will bury you in the skins of hogs. I will remove your heads and pack them in the fat of swine and bury them in 55-gallon drums. And I kept saying Muhammad was a sodomite, pedophile, you know, coward. It was great. So all day. And then I get that. Remember the guy, Sergeant whatever? I can't remember his name now. A couple sergeants that were emailing me that they don't like the fact that I fly the flag. And I'm beginning to think they were just trolls because they don't sound very military, and they definitely don't sound Christian now that they're – you know how when you get in the conversation and they start throwing swear words at you? I'm a Christian, by golly, effing this, effing that. And you're like, okay, yeah, you're real Christian. So that's the kind of day I've been having, and right now I just got that message while I'm on the air. I hope you're listening. I hope you do some exploration there, Andy. If not for you, for your kids, because I'm here to tell you, without Jesus Christ, you're doomed, and it's just sad. So, you know, we may be done here. I love that. I get about one of those every 2 weeks now, old friends that don't want anything to do with me, but that's just the way it is. An IED was found on a road in Texas. Now, the reports are really slim here. I've got one report that Stacy found that says it was a modified grenade rigged to go off, but it's not saying how. The one video that I saw just showed folks with some kind of robot. So in Texas, they found some kind of IED. The Colorado bomber, the recently paroled career felon who tried to blow up a mall on the same day of the anniversary of Columbine, was caught in Boulder, not far away. Boulder's like 30 or 40 miles away from Denver, People's Republic of Boulder. He probably just wanted to go back in, or it's false flag. So bomb stuff's going to start – you're going to start seeing more of it in America. And they can ban all the stuff they want. They can make you show a thumbprint to get fertilizer. You know, you're going to have to – they're going to put Drano behind the counter soon, things like that. But these maniacs, whether they're lone wolves, false flags, or Islamo-fascist, drug cartel-related terrorists, you're going to see more bombings in America. Another reason to get your stuff together and be alert and aware and always be at least at level orange when you're going around. So you're – Stacey, it's back and forth. Now you're on Ustream?
I couldn't hear it. I mean, I couldn't
– And Twinkle Toes is saying the chat room's scrolling backwards. Any idea on that one, Lou?
Really weird.
I don't know what the technical problems are. I think you've all got FBI sub-programs running on your computers. I think that's what's going on.
I can listen on the website, but I'm in the chat room.
Well, why do you have to listen? I'm right here. You're like 8 feet away. I can throw my sock at you. Here, let me throw my Gerber tool at you. See? I don't know. Okay, you want to listen? That's fine. We've got the bandwidth when we're here. You can listen. I think you just like wearing those headphones. You look like you're doing a dictaphone. Oh, yeah, when Steve Klein calls in, you want to be able to hear. Don't forget, Thursday we'll have Pastor Warren Mark Campbell on Practical Christianity. We played a sermon. What was the sermon again, Lou, that we played on Thursday? Come on. It was on slave mentality. We got a lot of good comments on that. I'm glad you enjoyed that. I don't know if Liberty Tree Radio has been playing our second hour or not. I don't know if they've been playing the first hour when I only do an hour. I really don't know. If you guys know, I'd appreciate some feedback. It would be nice. Olima's saying that she's having problems with the chat room too. I'm right here. I'm on dutchjones.info and I have no problems with the chat room. dutchjones.info and the chat room there is working good, but it's the same chat room, it's just embedded on the page.
Yeah,
so I'm not sure why that would be
weird.
Let's see. Yes, they are. Latier does replay your show. Cool. Thanks. I'm glad to hear that. It's okay. It's just backwards. Isn't that weird? There must be something in the settings. What is there in this? Is there something in the settings? Let me look at this. Chat room options. It won't let me do anything with the chat room options. That's weird. But I've been getting a few emails, a couple different things. Of course, the usual, what do I do now? I'm freaking out. Is it too late? Should I be doing stuff? And I found some stuff here, and I'm kind of putting together things that you should be doing. And people have asked me to prioritize it. I tried to. I think it was yesterday or the day before I kind of went through a few things. People said you did it too fast. You need to go into it in more detail. Well, I found some good stuff here. And the number one thing that you can do is find somebody outside the city, if you live in a city, that you can rely upon, that you can fall back to, an out-of-city contact. I advise this with everybody if it's an earthquake because the cell phones won't work. Find somebody outside your area that you can trust, that your kids can call, that you can leave messages with them, because that's the way the phones work. Man, I'm getting really bad. What is that? Do you hear that glitching? I'm hearing something here. I don't know what it is. Is it the computers? Hang on. Ooh, my phone's about to fall. No, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because I got my headphones up so high. But hopefully you guys are hearing me okay. Gather maps, get several different colors of highlighters, and mark at least 3 different routes out of the city and ending at the home of your out-of-area contact or your retreat. And make sure that your kids know them because they may be leaving on foot. I know, as horrifying as that sounds, you may not be there for your kids. You may be dead. Get all your flashlights, checks to make sure they're working properly. Make note of any batteries you need to purchase now. And that goes the same for your communication stuff. Get all your flashlights together. Post important phone numbers and your own address by each phone. That's just a typical thing that I advise people to do if they're, you know, anyway. You know, 911, where are you? I forgot where I was. I've seen people do that, like at the church. Well, you go call 911. I don't know the address. Well, we don't really have one. Tell them it's, you know, the only church on North Fork Drive. I need to do that. Place a pair of good boots or good hiking boots under each bed where they can be reached in the middle of the night. Now, that's something that I have a problem with because we've got so much gear packed around our house. It's kind of a cluttered mess, so I need to work on that. Place glow sticks next to each of your beds. Remember that, you know, you break them, shake them, chem lights, I call them. I don't call them glow sticks. Chem light sounds more manly. Listen to this radio show. Listen to it frequently. Download the past shows. Listen to the guests that we have on. If you can't listen to the show, you know, go to the archives and go to where Ole Ma's ministry is and listen to the archives. Call in with your ideas, folks. Take part in this solution here. I'm offering it to you guys, but nobody ever seems to want to call in unless they see a UFO or something. Make sure you put some cash, I recommend coins, in each adult kit, roughly about $100. There's some incidentals you're going to need, maybe stuff that you failed, Murphy's Law. So have about $100 in coins in each one of your kits. That could get heavy if you do pennies, so don't do pennies. Inventory your kitchen, food supply, and food preparation, everything that you have now. This is before you go out and buy stuff. Inventory your food, everything that you have in there, everything in your kitchen, how many pots and pans, everything. And inventory your family room and living room. Look around everything that you have. You'd be surprised what type of survival gear you may already have. Go through the bedrooms. Go through any offices. Go through your dining room. Go through everything that you had. And this will help you with the next step. You inventory and update your 24-hour, or excuse me, your 72-hour kits. If you're just beginning to collect backpacks for every family member, have a little meeting and go through who's got what. And Lou the other day, I said, where's your flashlight? Oh, I took it out of my pack. We all do it. I'm just using it as a teachable moment. I've done it. Stacy's done it. I've taken my gloves out of my backpack. Make sure the stuff gets back in there. Make sure it gets in there. Sort through your medicines that you need and replace any expired medications. Make arrangements with your doctor. What I did to the VA, and I'm going to say it right here, I lied to him. Said, hey, somebody stole my backpack full of meds. Can I get an extra 30 days? Because they've given me to me in 30-day supplies. And get an extra 30 days. Ask for your prescriptions, and then just go to Walmart and get them for $8. Get extras. And tell them. You may say, hey, look, I'm doing this for my earthquake kit. Can I get an extra 30 days? I get them in 3 months supplies, and that works out best for me. Important papers, if you care about that kind of stuff, birth certificates, personally, I could care less about all that. Documentation, if you think you need it, do it. Make sure you put it together. Just keep inventorying your house, your garage last, because your garage is going to be where you're going to find most of your stuff. Hatchets, chainsaws, saws that fold up for trees, hacksaws, anything like that. Inventory your garage and see what you can find in there. Now, for earthquake stuff, one of the things you might want to do is set aside copies of your insurance guy. That's for natural disasters, but I'm not talking about that today. Make copies of the front and back of all credit cards and record the contact phone numbers for all cards on these copies. That's, again, earthquake information. Place a flashlight and a whistle next to or slightly under each bed in the house. I've talked about that before. Everybody should have rescue whistles. They should have a survival necklace. And I've gone into great detail on what goes on a survival necklace. We may do that again here in the next few shows. I like this one that somebody sent me. Teach all family members to text. Communicating with text is rapid. It may work. I know there are places around Three Rivers where we live in the mountains where you can't make a voice phone call. But you can text out. It's really weird. So texting is a good skill to have your family do if you're going to rely on phones. let's see. And that was just, I think that was sent in to me by Minuteman. Minuteman sent that to me. Be looking for just anything that you have now that you can use before you go out and buy stuff. That was a big thing. People wanted me to hit that again, and I hope I did that with better detail. And I hope you guys in the chat room are discussing it more. Yeah, I don't know what that hiss is. It's kind of weird, actually. It's let me make sure this is up all the way. Oh, that's why. Hang on. Okay, that might be a little better there. Okay. We're getting some electronic. What it is the way the cables are. They're acting like an antenna, and they're picking something up. I don't know if it's TV. Turn off the TV. Do you have the remote? Where's the remote? Right here. Because I got Fox on in the background, because I always like to see the scroll underneath in case. No, that wasn't it. Turn it all off. Turn everything off, even the satellite and the. You can do it with the remote, Lou. What are you doing?
Give me the remote.
Lou's messing it up. What are you doing? I don't know what he's doing, but he's messing up the TV. No, it's still there. It's picking up. I hear a clicking and a popping. It's probably the listening equipment the surveillance van across the street has. They're probably flooding us with electromagnetic fields to see what they can do to us. But that's okay. The next thing I got, and I don't even know, it was kind of weird that three people, no, I don't have a battery charger nearby, nothing like that. you know what it is? Let me do this. When you said battery charger, it made me think about it. It's the cell phone. It just stopped, didn't it? Because the cell phone was plugged in through the soundboard. Yeah, let me do this. Good call, IC Freedom. RC Freedom. It is a type of battery charger. It's the USB cable that hooks the phone to into everything. Hear that? So that was good. Yep, it did stop. That's the cell phone. I forgot about that problem. I can't have everything plugged into one computer. I have to spread it out so it doesn't create like a ground phase loop. A couple people said, well, you know, you're talking all this good stuff, Dutch. You're telling us to get old Russian rifles. You're telling us to get old gear. But what are we going to do if armor comes for us? What if the Red Dawn scenario is true? What if it's armored vehicles from the police department? What if it's, you know, truly kicking on our doors? Well, for one, it is a possibility. And so I won't just – if it is a possibility, Murphy's Rule of Combat, I'm going to talk about it. I've done a lot of research. One of the biggest books is, I think it's David's Little Handbook from Paladin Press on how to defeat armor by Ragnar Benson. Ragnar Benson has some really good books on this stuff. I studied a bunch of stuff online. I've studied what the Finns did in the Great Winter War against the Russians, what the Russians did against the Germans, you know, those types of things against armor. Things like that. There are ways for just about every tank that I found out there, except for the Abrams M1. That is a super tank. So I'll briefly touch on that because we have a couple problems. Things that will work on armored cars, armored vehicles, on older tanks, other nations' tanks, are pretty easy to do. Molotov cocktails over the engine compartment starves the engine of oxygen and it stalls. Superheat the outside of the tank, and the people inside can't function. You start cooking off rounds in there, that kind of stuff. But the Abrams is all self-contained with filtration systems, and it takes a huge amount of fuel on the outside. So, of course, and the tracks are super strong. It's, you know, the explosions, the stuff you see in the old war movies don't work on the Abrams M1. However, it is still susceptible. Huge amounts, like I said, of fuel. Instead of a 1 gallon Molotov cocktail, think 55 gallon drum with gelled fuel in it, set off by a primary device like an IED. Would take it off. So it's going to take a lot of skills to trap the tank somewhere where you can get it to a 55 gallon drum of fuel. Is everything okay, Lou?
Yeah.
Okay. And set it off and take it out. Now, the Palestinians have been doing some really good stuff with the Israeli tanks. Same way. There's 55-gallon drums everywhere. The tank drivers get used to them, but they get next to the wrong one. Boom. It'll move the tank. And then just cover it in basically homemade napalm, which makes it impossible for them to see. It melts the outside stuff. The side that the track's on could be taken out. So short of getting really good anti-tank weapons, AT-4s and all that, you're probably not going to be able to do it. But generally, armor is what we're going to talk about. I don't care if it's the Have a Nice Day LAPD Ram vehicle that they use. If it's an improvised, some guy's taking a tractor. Historically, the best ways to take out armor, there's about three or four different things. One is to cause it to be separated from its infantry support. A tank's like a great big fat barroom brawler. It's slow, it's stupid, and it has to have a bunch of little guys around it to cover its back. So start taking out the infantry support, and that's what your snipers are for. And I'm going to talk about battlefield stuff first because there is really the best way to take out armor, and I'll tell you that in the last part of the first hour, or depending on when we get to it. And the thing with fire is think big. Think 1 gallon gelled fuel on the end of a stick. You know, duct tape that thing to a stick so you get more throwing distance, and cover cover the engine compartment, starve the motor of oxygen, create heat inside. Then you want to go after the viewports because your snipers will keep them buttoned up. They have to close the top. The tank commander has to go in, and you're going to have little prisms. They're these bullet-resistant acrylic prisms made of different materials. The material doesn't matter. You get your snipers to target those. You crack those. You're not going to break them, and they're prisms anyway. They're periscopes, but it's going to make it impossible for them to navigate. You want to cripple and blind them first. Then you want to stop them from communicating with each other. Get your snipers to target the antennas. Antennas, lights, sensing systems, target their, they'll have tear gas canisters on them, they'll have smoke grenade launchers, target all that stuff on the outside of the tank. Swarm the tank with hunter-killer groups and just take out all of their technology. They have reactive armor on the modern stuff. And those of you that don't know what reactive armor is, it's designed so that it senses immediately when, say, a rocket-propelled grenade comes and it detonates an outer shell of armor facing away from the tank to redirect the kinetic energy. Get your snipers to just riddle that stuff. You know, if the event is that you do have an RPG or something, you got to get rid of that reactive armor first. Now, most police and stuff like that don't have that, and your Billy Bob on the corner, your brigand who's taking a tractor and armored it up isn't going to have that. But be aware of what reactive armor does. Also, study the different vehicles that you may be facing. Now, like during World War II, some of those Russian tanks had 9 inches of armor, whereas the American tanks had 3, maybe 4. A 50 cal is going to take care of a lot of your armored vehicles that could be deployed civilly against you. Oh, it's already time for a break. Wow. Folks, we're going to take a break right now. When we come back, we're going to talk more about defeating armor in a cell warfare type scenario, guerrilla scenario. I want you to go to dutchjones.info, and if you can, please make a donation. Check us out, other stuff there. Check out the archives. But make sure you make a donation this month. We're kind of lean. We're really hurting. We barely paid the internet bill. So, folks, we'll be right back after this break. In black and blue, to aim the crosshairs of their guns at the end. I know a man who lives way up in Idaho, whose sole desire was only to be left alone. One day he sold a so-called friend a gun. One day the federal troops showed up and shot his wife and son. It's coming down, it's all around. The New World Order's training armies on our ground. Stormtroopers dressed in black and blue to aim the crosshairs of their guns at me and you. Way down upon a Waco, Texas farm, I saw the lawless law there flex its long mean arm. Before the sealed search warrants could even be served, the ATF shot up the place. Some not what they deserve. It's coming down, it's in your town. The New World Order's training armies on our ground. Stormtroopers dressed in black and blue. I bet their leaders think they're fooling me and you. Now foreign troops, they train upon American soil.
They hide and sneak around like snakes that slither and coil. And while the people turn their heads complacently, their federal income tax goes up to fund this tyranny. It's coming down. It's in your town. The New World Order's training army is on our ground. Stormtroopers dressed in blue and black, like the vicious dogs they are.
When the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info.
Back. I'm Dutch Jones. You're listening to Stronghold Radio, coming to you from Central California, representing Camp Kahuia, where we're about solutions, where we're about pointing out the problems, but not dwelling on them, and coming up with ways and tactics, systems, and building it all on Coram Deo beliefs that we must remain in the face of God in what we do. Not a Judeo-Christian God, not a touchy-feely hippie Jesus, but the God of the Bible, the God of the New and the Old Testament, the God who is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And if you don't like what we're preaching, it's not about me. You're the one with the hang-up, because you don't want it. Most people that don't like what we're doing don't read the Bible. And the Jews that don't like what we're doing don't even understand their own faith systems. It's sad, but that's just the way it is. But, folks, we're talking about how to defeat armor in a, cell warfare, guerrilla-type tactics. Don't fret. Armor isn't the end-all. I think they say artillery is the queen of the battlefield and armor is the king, but it's really the little guy with the rifle and the indignation, the anger, and the wherewithal that always wins the battles. Always wins the battles. Tanks run out of fuel. Artillery runs out of rounds. The crews get wiped out, which is probably the best way to take out any of these things. And we'll get to that last. If not, we'll get to it in the second hour. General Carver jumped in, and he was saying, take out the optics. Paint bombs. Anything that destroys the ability for them to see. Now, you got to realize they have sensors on the tanks now that are thermal imagers. And even if they throw smoke bombs, all that kind of stuff up, you burn tires, they're still going to see thermal imaging out of the tank. So if you figure out where the sensors are and you hit them with, a trash bag full of paint dropped off a building, a couple of those are going to take out their sensors, and it's going to be nasty for them. And they're going to have to send somebody outside the tank or an infantryman to clean it off. And guess what? Your snipers take care of them. Snipers are a critical thing, and make sure they're trained very, very well, trained to identify these vehicles and where the things are. And a lot of the more police-type armored vehicles, they don't have the optics and stuff. They just got slits and things because they're not used to going up against people that are trained. And you throw a 30 caliber round through one of those slits and let it bounce around inside of a police armored vehicle, it's going to wreak some havoc, not even to mention what a 50 cal would do. And they're not going to have the reactive armor and all that, and they'll have the run flat tires and things. I talked about immobilizing them, tank traps, maneuverability, dropping buildings on them. One of my favorite ways that I got from Ragnar Benson's book, and it was actually taken from the Russians, or maybe even the Jews in the ghetto. I think it may have come from the Jews that were resisting in the ghetto. They would take I-beams, take several strong men, or you could do it with a winch, and make a swing, a battering ram swing, and raise this thing 10 stories up on a building on a single line that they could drop it and trigger a booby trap. They'd harass the tank, get it to chase them down the alley, and they'd either trigger it remotely or something when the tank would hit it and this I-beam would come down and just take out the turret. You measure it so you know it's going to hit where the turret is. Make it so it just hits the front or the back of the tank, or excuse me, the side or the back of the tank. And if you sharpen the tip on this I-beam, you get your support crews working with making a giant pointy stick out of it. It's going to just wreak havoc on them. And even if you just slightly damage their main gun, I mean, they're going to have backup stuff. They're going to have, you know, cable-driven machine guns and stuff like that, belt-fed guns. But take out that main gun. Bend it. Tweak it. Do what you can. It's a combination of things that will stop them. What is Warland saying? I'm thinking of getting a hold of a model M1A Abrams tank just to find attack points for the model. Oh, you mean a model. I see what you're saying. Yeah, get a model and take a look at it. Let's see. Dutch, any suggestions for sniper training that people don't have access to long-range shooting? In my area, you can only find public ranges out to 200 yards. Lou, what's the name of the sniper program that we use? Think it up, Lou. What's it called? We've got a program that we use. I haven't used it in a while because we can shoot longer ranges where we're at. Practice as much as you can out to 200 yards and just know the ballistics, study ballistic sheets. But the best you can do is get somewhere where you can shoot long range. But this, what is the name of the program? Get your finger out of your mouth. You look like a two-year-old. We've got a program, and maybe we can look it up. It's on this computer, Lou. Find it on there, and I'll give the name and the website where they can get it. But we've got a simulator, and it's just, you know, you enter in the data, you adjust your scope and shoot, so that's always good to do that. let's see. Joan Carver saying, artillery is the big killer in war. Yeah, we'll deal with that later. But artillery is the queen of battle. Let's see. Tank traps, large pits. Works for armored cars too. Lure them down down an isolated area, drop. And the way the Finns beat the Russian armor was they would lure them off the main roads and into places that were melted and boggy. And you're going, but it's not. You know, what if they attack in summer? Okay, take a fire hydrant in a park and make an area boggy and lure the tank into it. Make it look like it's not boggy by covering it with burlap, sand, whatever. They drive into it chasing you. You run around the side, and they get stuck. Because the key to defeating armor is immobilizing it. Now I know the main guns have got ranges up to 2 miles, but they can only shoot what they can see. They're line-of-sight weapons, unless they're being supported by indirect fire, which tanks aren't really known for that. That's more artillery, which we'll talk about later. But you've got to find ways to defeat them visually, mobility. Penetrating their armor, coming up with some just nasty, nasty traps for them, things to lure them around. Electrocution's a good one. If you're working in an area where there's still power, figure out a way to drop stuff on them. Power lines. Drop high-tension power lines on them. Electrocute it. It's going to destroy their computers. It's going to mess with the guys inside, maybe even set off a few rounds. Now, General Carver just got to my next point, thermite. If you read Patriots, thermite's not that hard to make. You know, it's basically rust and aluminum and, I think, sugar or something. That formula's not in my head, but you can find it. And thermite, small thermite grenades placed on the main gun or on the turret to lock it up, it may be all you need. Over the engine compartment, so it burns through the engine compartment. Something the size of a soda can is going to burn a long, hot time and go right down into the vehicle and just create tons of havoc. You can make your own thermite. Plus, you can pick them up off the battlefield. Now, thermite's great for sabotage. You get behind the lines, you have to run sapper teams, and take out the tanks that way. You know, get into where they're maintained. Contaminate their fuel. There's all different kinds of ways you can contaminate fuel for these things. Diesel fuel is a little different than gasoline. It can usually handle a lot of weirdness. But do some research. Find out what it takes to destabilize diesel. But if they're gasoline, like police vehicles or something, a few pounds of sugar into their fuel tanks, they're not going anywhere. That's why, you know, it's really important to have these operational teams that can go behind enemy lines, per se, or go into town and take care of them. The next level that I wanted to talk about... capturing the armor, that's where... Okay, somebody's got a good question.
And it's emit like 400 degree fumes. Can cook you. Important to know. He's, General Carver's saying, stay clear of the rear of tanks. The engines emit like 400 degree fumes. They can cook you. Important to know. Oh, interesting. We used to just sneak up behind them and hit them with law rockets. That was our training, but that's just the way we taught to fight against the Russians. Dutch is saying, one of them's got a good question. What if you want to capture the armor like our friends in the Sudan did? That's where the tank traps come in handy. You trap them, you surround them, and you tell the tank crew, you're going to die, get out. And you strip them naked and send them packing. You know, after you've interrogated them for intelligence, now you've got a tank. And if it's a tank trap, you dig it out and use it. If you covered it in paint and trapped it somehow, you clean it off. So, yeah, you might want to figure out a way to capture armor, and that's a good one. Now, one of the best ways to take out any high technology on the battlefield is to take out the people that operate it and maintain it. This is where your intelligence gathering comes very much into play. You know in the rear area where it's safe, there are mechanics, there are loaders, there are computer techs, and these things will not run without their help. A multi-billion dollar fighter plane cannot take off from the tarmac if there's a 30 caliber hole through the control surfaces and the guy that fixes it is nowhere to be found, period. So you find out where they recreate, you find out where they drink, you find out where they party, and you can either put hunter-killer teams that go in and kill them all, slit their throats in the middle of the night. You can get barmaids turned to your side, poison them. Something simple as a few drops of Visine the night before a mission is going to take several people off the line. A few drops of Visine in their martini is going to take them out. Not to mention all the other good stuff you can do. Food poisoning. Who cooks their food? Get people infiltrated. Because they're everywhere the military goes, no matter who it is. What do they do? Excuse me. they hire locals. We always do it. And that's important. To get behind the lines. Find the guy who makes the bread. Poison the bread. Let you be the delivery guy for the bread the one day and put a bomb in the barracks. If you take out the people are the key. The equipment's just armor, literally. It's just dressing. And if they can't deploy all of their armor, they may decide we're not going to do this mission today. If they can't supply, and we'll get a little bit into the artillery, if we can't give artillery support or air support, we may not decide to send out our teams to harass your people. Taking them out behind the lines is the way to go. One guy with a 50 cal from a vantage point getting off 3 to 4 rounds before he has to evac out and get back up over the hill can take out a lot of equipment. Remember the Scuds during the first Gulf War? We had teams, mostly British teams, with single-shot 50 cals roaming around Iraq, just putting holes in them. One half-inch hole in them would take them out so we could protect Israel. Some of those teams got captured. I think it was Bravo 2-2 was the movie? 2-0. Bravo 2-0 is a good depiction of that. A true story about what we were willing to risk to keep Israel from getting scudded. But that's the key, behind-the-line stuff. It may be one key element. Study this equipment. There may be one thing that they don't have in the supply line ready that you could take out that's going to be weeks, days, whatever, even months before they can get another one. Or they'll have to cannibalize other pieces of equipment. You need to learn what that is. It's like General Carver right now is throwing all this great stuff up in there about armor because obviously he's got a working knowledge of it. So you want to sit those people down. If you've got somebody that worked armor in your militia, go, well, what is it that they cannot run without? What is the one piece of equipment inside an Abrams M1A1 that the tank commander will go, no, I don't care, I'm not going out without that. And whatever that piece of equipment is, figure out how to defeat it, figure out where they store it, figure out where it's manufactured, and go take it out. Go take it out. The principles are the same. During World War II, who did the Allies bomb? Ploesti, where the ball bearing plants were. The Germans needed ball bearings for just about every piece of equipment they used, but if they kept wiping out the ball bearings, they couldn't make replacement equipment, right? I mean, that's the fact, Jack. We were bombing civilians who were making ball bearings. I'm trying to remember the plant that made the rockets. I can't remember the name of it. Usually it's in my head. They bombed the places that made the components for the rockets that were being used against Britain. They had to get those launch systems out. Man, I used to know all these names. I used to have such a good memory and a good brain. I filled my Rolodex with too much stuff, and now I can't remember anything. Also, isolate the routes that you know they have to use. If you study the first Gulf War, they had pretty much free rein because what? They were operating in a desert. It was like a naval battle with armor and aircraft. Of course, the aircraft played a huge role in it, and we'll talk about defeating aircraft in a later date. But the armor moved freely in the desert. Deserts are made for tank battles and armored vehicle and mechanized cavalry and infantry. You get them into the terrain in the United States, sure, we got deserts, sure, we got big open places, but nothing like that. We don't have big sandbox deserts. We have a few places that are duny. Penemundo, that's right, Penemundo. Thank you, Warland, it's where the rockets were being launched from and made. Thank you. I knew somebody out there would know it, Penemundo. Everything okay? You're moving around like something's important. Okay. I won't share that with anybody then. I'll just keep it between us. Probably heard you whisper it. Let's see, where was I? Oh, they move freely in the desert. But there are places that they're just not going to do any good. I tell you, in L.A., by the time the debris falls, it's going to be a nightmare. One of the things that the Allies were doing during the Battle of the Bulge, when they were in Belgium and that area, when the giant Panzer tanks were coming through, they'd lure them into the villages, and usually those were choke points anyway because of the bridges. And these big German tanks just couldn't maneuver. Several times they would just cave buildings in on themselves trying to maneuver through. These German tanks would just mow over trees, buildings, people, whatever they had to do. And so you've got to lure them to you choose the battlefield. Sun Tzu taught us that. Oh, we just lost power. What was that? Oh, no, it's that. My screen went blank. I hate that. This screen goes blank all the time. Deserts, would they have black on blue signs across the Nevada highways? Yeah, Kelly's. Yeah, I saw the movie Kelly's Heroes when they moved down railways and stuff. Oh, you're talking about, yeah, the big Tiger tanks and that or whatever they were. I don't go too much off Hollywood movies. I study documentaries for tactics on how they fought them. Artillery pieces are really useful against armor, but as a guerrilla force, you can't really move and set up your own artillery. It'd be nice to have a German 88 that you had mounted on like the back of a truck or something that you could move fast. And look at what happened in Libya. Gaddafi was using his tanks. I think they were Soviet like T-73s or something. I don't even know what the latest Soviet tanks are, but that's what he had. And every time they go out, they were just wreaking havoc on the rebels, you know, on the Muslim Brotherhood, until the UN and NATO got involved. And it was easy to pick them out because they're like, oh, well, we know the rebels don't have tanks at that point. They did later. And they were whacking them, so they stopped using their tanks because of that tactic, because it was unsafe for them, because they weren't even using them with infantry or anti-aircraft cover. The American paradigm is you send out a tank division, they have infantry, they have anti-tank support, either mechanized or towed. They have anti-aircraft that goes along with them. Because what is the enemy of the tank on the battlefield now? It's aircraft, tank-killing aircraft. Look at the A-10. You know, granted, if we could get some of the units of the military to switch and we had A-10s, the tanks won't even be an issue. Tank busters, they'll be dead. I remember when I was going in the military in basic at Fort Benning, we had a couple tankers, little tiny guys, even smaller than me. I'm 5'7". These guys are like 5'1", 5'2". And the drill instructors used to love tormenting them. They'd go, what is the average life expectancy of an American infantryman on a battlefield when, you know, in Europe if Russia invades? They'd go like, you know, six to 8 days, something like that. And they'd go, what is it for, you know, a tanker? And they'd go, 30 seconds, because there's just so much. And the Russians had so much overwhelming anti-tank technology. You know, and you never know. Tabletop stuff never really applies completely. But that's something you got to think about. The key thing is to remember that just don't fear them. Think the David and Goliath scenario. It's just a big, dumb, slow-moving weapon. You can either avoid it, trap it, take it out before it comes to fight, or confront it head-on with a strategy that you stick to And remember in Red Dawn, since we're talking movies, when the Cuban, you know, things started to stalemate in the little town of Calumet, and he comes out and he's like, Yankee tanks are moving across the land. I don't know what to do. And he says, round up all the RPGs, dig holes 100 meters apart, you know, come up with hunter killer teams, and when the Yankee tanks approach, take them out. One of the things they trained us to do, this is, and you got to realize, when I was in, it was Russia was still the bad guy, and they thought they were going to come in with overwhelming armor in Europe. We would be in a fighting position. They moved a Soviet tank over the top of us. Sometimes they would park it on top of us just to kind of freak us out. But then when it passed over us, we popped out of our spider hole and shot it in the tail end with a simulated LA rocket. We didn't have the AT-4s that they have today. But whatever it is, you've got to train your people to do it, and you have to have multiple ways of doing it. So the key things, have good snipers that can take out their optics and their communications. Come up with a mechanism to blind them with paint, with explosives, tar if you have to. Use whatever resources you have. Heat the tank up, even if it's an Abrams, and everybody I checked with today said, oh, you can't do that to an Abrams. The engine won't shut off. They're all designed for that because the designers knew the tactics that were used to defeat armor in the past. Isolate it by you picking the terrain, whether you're out in the middle of nowhere or you're in a city. Drop buildings on them if you have to. You know, we talk about dropping toilets on the Nazis in Italy. Well, drop a building on a tank if you have to. Make sure you get all the civilians out of there, but if you have to, do that. Get a hold of your own armor. Find bulldozers, heavy construction equipment, big wrecking. Can you imagine what a wrecking ball would do to a tank coming down the road if you planned it right? Knock the tank on its side, and then you can still kind of use it if you need to. Find out where the crews are. Find out where the maintenance crews are. Find out where their supply chain is and take out the supply. It is so much easier to send five guys behind enemy lines. I know you may be going, oh, this sounds like Kelly's Heroes, or not Kelly's Heroes, Force 10 from Navarone. Go way behind enemy lines. Find out where the stuff's coming off the ships and take it out there. You know, it's easier to take out a tank as it's being taken off of a ship in L.A. Harbor from a U.N. supply ship than it is when it's got a full-trained crew on it. You've just got lackeys driving around in the harbor. There's the place to do it. There's the time to take it out or sink the whole ship. You've got to think outside the box, folks, and don't limit your thinking. How much damage could you do in L.A. Harbor with one big barge that you could just run around and ram it into stuff? Of course, I'm brainstorming now, but think about it. Find ways to stop that vehicle from working before you have to face it in anger on the battlefield. And hopefully people are picking up what I'm putting down. Twinkle Toes said she lost us. Are we still streaming? I don't know what kind of... I think she's using that wireless anywhere thing, so that could be why. We've got about 4 minutes left here. I've shared with you what I wanted to share with you. We can talk a little bit about some other things, but don't forget that we're going to be here for a second hour. Steve Klein's going to come in probably during the break, and we'll be on Liberty Tree Radio, and I need you all to stay tuned in. We'll be talking about Code 20. He has some stuff he wants to talk about. Janet Napolitano was in L.A. today, and he called me to tell some of the stuff she was saying. You're re-back. Oh, you're back. Good. But the key thing here is to not lose focus and don't be afraid. I get, every once in a while, I get these guys that think that standing armies are undefeatable. And what's funny is they always ignore what's going on right now. Look what's going on in Afghanistan, Iraq, Pakistan, all over the world. I mean, standing armies get their butts kicked now. Standing armies are political tools that don't really stand a chance. Somebody was saying, I can't remember, I think it was Warland, somebody said, you know, we need a bunch of Marines. I'm like, no, actually what we need is like a bunch of Rangers, people that are adaptive, that aren't used to having everything they need. And if I'm insulting Marines, I'm generalizing, don't take it personal. But Marines are there to hold beaches, they get, you know, combined forces stuff, but you want somebody who can go behind enemy lines with what they have on their back and just wreak havoc and use the enemy's resources against them. That's how we're going to survive. And modern armies don't know how to do that. Modern armies are spoiled. They have satellite imagery. They have multi-layers of communications. They have air-conditioned hooches that they go home to every night, even in battle. They know that if they're wounded, they're off the field within 15 to 30 minutes and in a hospital doing surgery on them. Well, how better do you think to mess them up if they find out that all the ambulances have been taken out or that the battalion aid station that they've depended upon got taken out in a sapper raid? Take that from the dog. And dog's playing with a dead duck or something. I think it still got some life in it. I thought I heard it quack. Stop giving the animal or the dog dead animals to play with unless we know they're dead. And it's interesting to me that the pride in the technology is going to be their downfall, whoever we face. I watch the military channel like, new leaps in technology, these new high-end weapons, bullets with facial recognition in them, and airburst rifle rounds, and, you know, all this technology. It all runs on batteries. It all runs on microchips. Now, I'm not saying that I know this is going to happen, but what's going to happen when we get a big old solar flare and God decides to take out their technology? I'm here to tell you my Mosin Nagant is still going to work, okay? My Mosin Nagant is still going to work when the modern land warrior gear that requires all the batteries, they're not even going to know how to cook their meals. They're not going to know how to call, they won't be able to communicate. They won't be able to call for all that artillery and air cover. So I have faith that those things are going to be dealt with. And even if God doesn't take it out, we can take it out. We can take it out easy. Everything they need requires layer after layer of energy and technology. I'm not worried one bit about it. A handful of sand in a generator fuel tank is going to stop everything. A handful of sugar in the fuel tank of the vehicle that brings the medical supplies is going to stop everything. And that's why the Taliban and everybody are winning. We'll be back after the break on Liberty Tree Radio. Thank you for listening to the first hour of Stronghold Radio. We'll be right back, guys. In Boston Bay, it was he who braved the winter in the days of Valley Forge, fighting side by side together with a fella named of George. Johnny Freedom, Johnny Freedom, you can meet him on each page of history. He's the spirit.
Crash does come when there is a natural disaster during civil unrest. The last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. www.dutchjones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.dutchjones.info.
There is rebellion in the wind.
A new world order. A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun? Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
Avenge me!
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all points bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order. A new
attention.
World order.
A new world order. Attention.
Government is
an emergency. Repeat. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
What kind of radio show is this?
Shut back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones
Radio Program.
And now for something completely different.
Well, greetings and salutations and welcome to a broadcast of Stronghold Radio. I'm Dutch Jones and we're pleased to be on the Liberty Tree Radio Network. We're pleased to be transmitted by Scotty 38 in upstate New York and all other outlets. And a big welcome to our pod people for tuning in. And we've just been talking about ways to take out armor, and we're going to carry a little bit more with that theme because we're talking about cell warfare. And, of course, if we're talking about cell warfare, we have to have Steve Klein with us. Are you there, Steve?
I'm here. Great to be on the show. I'm going to lose you about 2 or 3 minutes, then I'll call you back. But, yeah, if you use cell warfare, this guy was talking to earlier today, Dutch Jones brought out, you know, it's a lot easier if you just go to the motor pool and you do in the mechanics. A lot of people don't understand. They look at the old Soviet Union and Red China, and they think about their huge numbers. Well, they can only keep about 10% of their stuff running, including their men, because they're always sick, and they have to cannibalize everything. So The same thing. One of the reasons why the United States military is so dependable, so good, our mechanics, our supply lines, our logistics is second to none, way off the charts, truly, truly elite. And so as Dutch said, watch the tanks, stay out of their way, use code 20, stay 5-10 miles away, stay out of their way.
Oh, I think we lost him there. He's down in L.A. somewhere. He will call back in when he can, and we will continue the conversation. We'll just keep listening to see if he can hear us, and I think it just disconnected there. Yeah, he'll call back in. So when you hear the phone ring, don't freak out, guys. It's just a weird phone that I have. But he's right there, and we did discuss that a little bit. Just if you can't take on the armor, stay away from it. There he is. Yeah, we got you back. Are you there? No, I just hung up on him again. I think I hung up on him. Let's try it again. He'll call back in. I hit the ignore button like an idiot. He'll have to call back. See, technology, you can't count on it. Even a guy like me, I can't even hit the right button. There you go. Technology's not going to save you, right, Steve? You never know when it's going to cut out.
Well, and that's a great example. And another interesting example is one of the reasons that the German Nazis defeated the French. The French were so dumb they did not have radios in their tanks, and the Germans had FM radios and were able to cohesively work together, network together, and the French tanks, a lot of them were actually considered better, but it was the communications that beat them. So you're always going to have dead cells, you're always going to have down areas, you're always going to have vehicles that break down. They got to bring them fuel, they got to bring them food, and you just take them out. That's classic guerrilla warfare. Swamp Fox, as portrayed by Mel Gibson in The Patriot, drove Tarleton and Cornwallis absolutely nuts. And Swamp Fox never shot around. He never pulled his sword. He was in charge of only 50 men. Half of them were black.
Yeah.
They had to melt down pewter for bullets. His sword was rusted shut in the scabbard. But he, in cell, classic cell warfare, a great study. So I wouldn't even worry about tanks. Helicopters are a hell of a lot more dangerous.
Yeah.
Helicopters. But once again, they're going to run out of fuel, they're going to run out of everything else. And if you're smart and you lay low, and you go out and you pick off a few of the leaders, go and look at the YouTube about the Battle of Algiers, and you're basically an assassin, properly under Christian biblical authority, just like Bonhoeffer was an assassin to get rid of Hitler. He wasn't murdering Hitler. He was getting rid of a murderer.
Yeah.
So all this stuff comes into play, but I wouldn't worry about tanks or choppers or satellites or any of that. I'd factor them into my battle plan, and then I would flip it to them, you know, and low-tech will beat high-tech. Everybody out there is smart, and one of the problems that the, you know, the big military boys, just as Mel Gibson said about Cornwallis, he's arrogant, and that's a weakness.
And they're predictable, and the thing is, like you said there, you know, don't worry about them, don't fear them. The Mujahideen in Afghanistan don't worry about our tanks. They don't worry about our helicopters. And it's like, you know, going back to what your area of experience is in, what did the Viet Cong do? Did they didn't swarm our tanks. They didn't, you know, except for a few battles like the Tet Offensive and things like that, they never stood toe-to-toe. They stayed underground.
Absolutely.
That's why last week I talked about caves and tunnels being a key thing. And we can build around that and adapt and move. That's the beauty of a guerrilla force. You can be much more fluid on the battlefield than somebody who has multiple layers of leadership and chains of command and have to ask permission to do things now, like our boys in Afghanistan and Iraq have to do now. They can't even pull a trigger without a confirmation.
Right, exactly right. And if everything falls apart, the Internet's going to fall apart. Their communications is going to be worse than ours. And again, you consider a major military base, the civilians are going to be like locusts overrunning that military base or police force, getting their food, tying them up. They're not going to be able to do anything. I wouldn't even factor that in, and especially where the Church of Korea is, the topography there is like Switzerland. It's just absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
Plus, you got this smart guy there named Dutch Jones, and he's a good battle planner. And again, I wouldn't even factor that in. There's so many. We have 300 million people in the United States and just a handful of military bases. March Air Force Base is a large air reserve base for me. But I don't even consider that. I've got three locations where I could go, and they were close to March Air Force Base, but I would never bother them. They would never bother me. Marine Corps Base Camp Pendleton is very close. Same thing. They're not going to come out where I am. I'm going to stay away from them and avoid them. Mao Zedong, when he had his long march, I think they call it 6,000 miles long. I doubt if it was that long, but proves the point. A lot of times a tactical retreat is a lot more effective than a head-on assault.
That's right. And hopefully I got my levels good here. People said I was overpowering, so hopefully it's better now. Thanks for the report, Olima.
Well, we just hope you're overpowering to the bad guys.
Yeah, there we go. Not overdriving everybody's speakers. One of the things that a lot of people, like I've got this Sergeant Hayes that keeps writing me, telling me, oh, you know, our guerrilla force will never defeat anybody. You guys don't have the kind of training we do. And I'm like, are you watching?
What have you been drinking?
Yeah, well, he claims to be in the cavalry, and I'm like, he probably has a hobby horse in the backyard, and he puts on a hat. Because he hasn't said anything that even sounds like. But he listens to the show, and if he's out there, I hope I insulted your manhood. But these guys that are saying, you know, oh, my answer to them always is, well, then how come we haven't pacified all of Afghanistan? How come the Russians didn't? How come the British didn't? And it's because
nobody's ever defeated Afghanistan. That's a graveyard of empires. They just use the topography like the South Sudanese use the Nubian Mountains. They don't give a damn about the tanks. You never got to pacify those guys.
No.
Leave them alone. Just do like MacArthur, island hop them. Leave them alone.
Yeah. Isolate the strong points of resistance.
Exactly.
Or what was it? Hit them where they're weak, you know, and just
keep
moving.
Oh, you always go for the weak link.
Yeah.
You got Down syndrome for their commander. That's where I'm hitting. I'm not going to the strong point. That's crazy. That's one of the things that mystifies me about the great warriors like Dave and the cavalry, thinking that a guerrilla force has never defeated a large army. Dude, what have you been smoking? Have you ever read about Napoleon getting defeated by scorched earth in Europe? And how about this thing called the American Revolution and some other guy. What's the name of that guy? Quantrell and Mosby and all the rest of these guys? Come on, dude.
Yeah.
Well,
and it's like I love using the, you know, the British Empire, which was even more powerful than the Roman Empire at a point. You know, the sun never set. And look what happened to him in Africa when the Zulu got angry at him. A bunch of guys with pointed sticks took him out. Sure, they lost the war. I understand that. But there were huge British defeats. And as far as I know, that's still the greatest defeat of a modern military force from a primitive people, because they just got arrogant. They built forts, they isolated themselves in specific places, and the entire Zulu nation rose up and just slaughtered them.
Gimbinfu and the French. You know, we could have fought Vietnam as a conventional warfare war. We could have attacked Hanoi and then exited, as we should have done in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
But going back to the point, I wouldn't even worry about armor. I wouldn't factor it in. You know, those things are so high-end maintenance. What, a helicopter, for every hour it flies, takes 100 man-hours to keep it in the air, and your logistic lines are drawn so thin. And I mean, what's the nearest closest base, just a what-if?
Yeah.
What's the nearest major military base to the Church at Kauai, Hunter Liggett?
No, that would be the Lemoore Naval Air Station, which is a Top Gun school.
That's the air station. They're not going to mess. They're going to put the damn
wing wipers.
They don't know what to do.
Yeah, a bunch of Navy wing wipers. They have a few Marines there to man the gate and stuff, but they don't do anything. I've talked to them over there.
They're not going
to
do anything. People don't realize, and I know I had to be in charge of a couple of convoys years ago, and I mean, what you and I do in a regular car is a piece of cake, but to run 20, 30, 40, 50, 200 vehicles, military vehicles,
breakdowns,
is a blankety-blank nightmare.
Oh, yeah.
And then if you throw in some guys who are really concerned about stopping those guys, I mean, it's a piece of cake. Let's shift gears and stay right on track with the armor, and shift gears to the stuff that happened. We saw that email about Fresno. And the guy did a code 20, and then the intelligence officer said, "Ah, poo-poo," then now they don't do any of that. That sounds really intriguing to me.
Yeah, in Fresno, there are people probing the, it's an air reserve base. There's National Guard units there. They have a helicopter maintenance crew. They have some interdiction fighters that they use for homeland security there. And what was happening is Muslims were probing the gate. Muslims were at the convenience stores around it asking questions, all kinds of stuff. And when they contacted the intelligence officer, who's a lieutenant colonel, he was like, "Oh, no, none of this is going on. None of this is happening. We haven't heard anything about it." But I guarantee you, any military base in America has had this happen now.
Every day.
It would be stupid for them not to be doing this, to not be probing our rear area bases, because it's like we said, if I want to stop somebody, I'll stop them at their home before they even go to work. And that's what they're doing. It's easier to hit a National Guard base here than it is to hit a forward observation base in Afghanistan.
Absolutely, yeah. Let me give you a good example. Back when I was in boot camp in 1968, and then I went to our follow-up schools, we used to keep our rifles on our racks, our beds, and we'd lock them up, and we'd keep them in our eight-man tents. And then with a hit piece of stuff, they hit a couple of National Guard places. And then what they did was they took all of the weapons away from all of the military guys, and they put them in a central armory. So in order to do any operation, say a battalion or regiment, it takes hours. Hours for a battalion or a regiment or even a company of guys to check out all the weapons. Exactly.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't understand that. Well, in Code 20 guerrilla warfare, gee, guess what you're going to do? You're going to sneak in, slink in, and you're going to take control of that armory. Even if you don't get the weapons, the soldiers are unarmed. The guys on the inside are locked in. They can't do anything.
Yeah.
There's a million ways you can take these guys out. And let's go to Larry Wick, just like a street fight. When I sit down at a table to eat, like you and I did the other day, I look and see, oh, where's a salt and pepper shaker? If there's a metal container for the napkin, where's that? Mm-hmm. If there's some candles with a heavy metal base, where's that? And mm-hmm. I've got all of these implements where I can get into self-defense. And then I'm going to flop back into the Fresno lieutenant colonel saying, "Oh, no, they don't do any of that." Well, that's top secret stuff. he cannot disclose it.
Sure.
And so for a guy who doesn't think that a guerrilla force can defeat a major war group, well, that fits right in with a paradigm where you're getting false information. Now you're getting false information not only from the enemy, you're getting false information from your own guys, a light bird in the Air Force.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, you know, they're not going to tell us anything that's going on. Today in Texas, the headline said IED found along a freeway. I checked out the reports of it. It was happening just before I went on the air, but it was a modified grenade that had somehow been booby-trapped to go off. They sent in the bomb robot before we went to air, so I don't know what happened. But I have a feeling we're going to start seeing more of that here. You got that maniac in Colorado that tried to blow up a mall for whatever reason. You know, I don't think he was a Muslim, but he was a maniac. Who knows? But there's a lot of this stuff going on around America that they just keep quiet. They just dropped the charges against about 20 Hmong, if I said that right, here in Fresno, who had gotten a shipload, S-H-I-P, for those of you that want to try and catch me, of...
we don't want to make those guys mad.
AK-47s and RPGs. And they were going to go to Laos and overthrow the government. Well, they just dropped all the charges. So there are people out there operating the equipment's here. I talked to the highway patrolman from the state's investigative forces that said he saw a gas station full of RPGs and AK-47s that were brought here by Muslims to give to sell to the Hmong. But it's not in the news anywhere. Lewis and I did some work for this highway patrolman, so he was kind of flapping the gums, and we just shut up and listened and didn't, you know, let him brag. But it fits right in, and then a couple of weeks later, we see they're dropping the charges because, you know, they want to just make it go away.
Why should the Muslims expose themselves when they can get all of this stuff, give it to the Hmongs, or give it to other people, KKK, whatever, skinheads, whatever, and let them do their dirty work? I mean, that's classic divide and conquer, and plus, it gives them cover. And they get their network established outside of their own group. If they break the network of Hmongs, they don't care.
Yeah.
So, yeah, all of this stuff is working together, thinking about how to take care of the tank, the cell warfare. If you've got 50, 60 families, you're networked together, you watch the tanks or the helicopters, you just stay out of the way. And once again, they're going to be overwhelmed by the civilians. If things fall apart, the last place in the world you want to be is near a military base in the United States, because the civilians are going to turn on the locusts, and they're just going to eat that thing dry, because that's where all the food, all the water, all the medical supplies are. Hospitals, they know they'll be safe, and et cetera, et cetera. So,
well, and that'll be the opportunity, because what do our militaries do everywhere they go to a foreign nation? They hire local employees to do all the dirty work.
Yep. Yeah,
and again,
exactly.
They're going to be swarming there for a few shiny pieces of silver so that they can become mama-sans and papa-sans and do the plumbing and all the stuff that the GIs no longer have to do for some reason.
Baby-sans, too.
Yeah. And that's the way it's going to be. And that's been the downfall of our troops, you know, the infiltrators. Yeah. Lou and I were watching National Geographic. It's just like Restrepo. And I want to talk about that for a minute. U.S. Green Berets over at Firebase Cobra, and how they were completely infiltrated too. They'd go out on missions and there'd be ambushes waiting for them because somebody was watching the base or somebody's in the base. I don't know if you knew this. I don't know if you got the email, but the producer, and I forgot his name, for Restrepo, the director, was killed in a mortar attack in Libya last week. So.
Yeah, he did a good job on that movie. He did a good job.
Yeah.
Now, and that brings a good example. Here you have the best trained soldiers in the world, the Green Berets, and yet they don't understand cell warfare. It's like, they're watching you everywhere you go.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's just, and that's why it's interesting. So grandma is the best kept secret in warfare, because grandma gets all of the intel for her grandsons, granddaughters, sons, daughters, and she passes around the information with the highest degree of truth. She's going to vet everything that comes through. Are you sure you saw them there? Are you sure they were carrying these weapons? She's got her children and grandchildren at stake. And so there you have the Green Berets, just like you had the French Foreign Legion at the MBN Pew and all these other things. I have a great book. You could probably get it online. It's a tome of two volumes. It's called Shadow Warfare in the Shadows. It's the history of guerrilla warfare going all the way back to Alexander the Great. And it just goes after campaign after campaign. There's like 270 examples where irregular guerrilla forces have defeated really mainline top elite Army groups and Navy groups. Really, really a good book. So I would suggest that for anybody if you're really serious about this stuff. Now, if you're just going to sit around and complain and bark and play alpha dog in an armchair, Dutch and I really are not interested in working with you. If you're Larry Wick or Josh Pearson, who served in Iraq and got his leg blown off, and he did in Iraq what I did in Vietnam, and now he's part of Code 20, come on in. We'll work with you. We'll learn from you. You'll learn from us. We'll network together, and as Machiavelli said, a civilian citizen army is almost unbeatable. Yeah. And the reason it is, because Dutch is going to fight to the death for Stacy and Lou. I'm going to fight to the death for my wife and kids. But the guys coming in, mercenaries and these other guys who are not patriots, they're not in the fight. Their heart is not in the fight. Once they see, well, and a great example of that, remember, well, it's before you were your time, the B-52 pilots started getting shot out of the sky with the new SAMs that the North of Vietnamese got, and several of the B-52 pilots immediately became conscientious objectors and refused to fly.
Yeah, kind of a
very
catch-22
interesting.
There.
Yeah. Very, very interesting.
Yeah. I'm old enough to remember the kill stats every night on the news. I was born in '66. But I do remember, the problems with the pilots, Hanoi Hilton, all that. Two things that I wanted to bring up. One, when you mentioned the bombers, it made me forget. One thing that logistics is, everybody relies on logistics for the enemy, and it's their downfall. I looked up today. To get a gallon of gas to the forward bases in Afghanistan is $600 a gallon.
That makes sense.
$600 a gallon. So one of the things you mentioned here is we don't have the chain of command, and Mark Klonke talks about this all the time. We have more 50 cals in the militia than, sniper rifles than all the militaries of the world combined, and we don't have to ask permission to go get them out of the gun safe. So,
right.
Remember that. The short chain of command, independent cells working independently in their area, fighting for their wives and their children, fighting for their farms. And you think of Lexington and Concord, April 19th. It wasn't just the battle on the green. When the British retreated from the church there after they got their fannies handed to them on the bridge, they got harassed all the way back by fathers and sons leaving their farmhouses, tinkerers and blacksmiths, and going to the main road and just shooting them. And the only way they knew about it was a couple guys on horses, William Dawes and the rest of the guys from the Midnight Ride, Paul Revere. Simple. One guy came by, the British are coming, nobody sat down and said, okay, well, I need a written permission, I need a warning order, I need my TONE set up, I need to go do weapons draw, we got to make sure, what's the uniform of the day? No, they showed up with their, 50 rounds of paper cartridges, and they did what they had to do to send the British running. And it's great because you talk about, like, what we're doing with, boy, there's so many groups now, Christian Defenders, Christian Guardians. What was the list of that you sent me in the email?
It was all the defense leagues, all of the European defense leagues and American defense leagues. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, and, with Code 20, so that's four different groups now all working in conjunction worldwide to get on board and have at least a communication link, and communication's everything in this. You talked about the French not having radios in their tanks. I may never go to I'm never going to be able to go to Europe to stand with my brothers there just because it's not going to happen, but we can learn from their mistakes, they can learn from our victories, vice versa. And I'm getting lots of requests now from these different European groups, like especially in Pakistan, Europe, saying, well, what do you do for training? What is your training like? Can you tell me about it? And today I got my first, and I know I'm doing something right, I got my first Arabic written piece of hate mail. And I had to put it through a translator to see what it was. And then I used the same translator to defile Muhammad and his religion. And I sent all this. I just pounded the guy with all this stuff. And then he sent me something in English that was poorly written about my mother who's dead. But it was just funny. So now I'm getting hate mail from, and when I checked, it was from Saudi Arabia.
You didn't cry, did you?
Oh, a lot. I was really upset that I
bet you were laughing.
Yeah.
You're crying because you were laughing so hard.
I wrote back. The original message was, it says,
we love death more than you love life. And I put, I love my children more than you do. And I was like, just, I hit him with the stuff. I said, go ahead, come here. I said, I will throw your body in a pit with pig fat. I will behead you and wrap your skull, wrap your head in the skin of a hog and bury it somewhere else. I just, I kept sitting, and I converted it all to Arabic with this program that Lou showed me how to do, and was just pounding him with this stuff, like 8 or 9 emails.
Cool.
And then finally I get this poorly written one back. It was like, you MF-er, you this, you that. You know, and then he blocked me so I couldn't send him any more emails. So I was like, yeah, this guy, he's
good.
Can you send me like 3 things? And I said, well, I don't know what he's saying. It's just, it had a picture of, you know, of a jihadist, and you know, in the email, and I'm like, well, I don't know if this is from a Christian or what, but when I translated, I knew what it was, so we're making somebody mad.
Yeah. Well, what you did is perfect. Blessed are the peacemakers, and you let them know, if you come over here, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
And that fulfills Romans 13:10. Love is the fulfilling of all law. If you want to come and get Stacy and Lou, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what Nehemiah did when he built the wall. And significantly, Nehemiah would not let the Arabians, chapter 4, verse 7 of Nehemiah, chapter 6, verse 1 of Nehemiah, he would not allow the Arabians, the sons of Ishmael, inside the gates. As soon as Fortress Europe, Christendom, allowed the Muslims to come inside the gate, the Trojan horse, it was game over.
Yeah.
Now in America, we've done the same thing, but thank goodness for us, we have a tripwire called Europe.
Yeah.
And enough Americans are beginning to network together. I was so thrilled yesterday when I stumbled on American Defense League groups. I went like, wow, awesome. There's, we got between Europe and the United States, Australia, I think I saw one in Thailand. I saw one in Indonesia, of all places, and they're all on board with us.
You know, that's what's great, is that more and more countries are starting to understand what's going on here. They're asking me all kinds of questions now that I've reached out to them, like, what can I do to train here? What can, you know, we don't have this. We don't have the rights that you have. You know, we can't. I said, well, find a way to get here. You know, if I have to loan you a weapon, I'll loan you a weapon. If I have to, you know, train you with a BB gun, I'll train you with a BB gun.
Yeah, we'll train you like Larry Wick.
Yeah.
Larry Wick's going to train us, and I'm not going to Indonesia or Saudi Arabia, but if they can come over here, we'll show them hand-to-hand combat so that they are beyond the stuff that you ever see in the movies, and they will be able to quickly arm themselves, biblically done in accordance with love, the fulfilling of all laws, done in accordance with love your neighbor as yourself. Dutch and I have never threatened anybody, never. I have told them, if you do that, I will kill you.
Yeah.
The reason I do that is I'm a peacemaker. I have never been assaulted on the streets in our 1,500, 1,600 outreaches. I've been assaulted on other instances, but never from doing the way we do it.
Yeah.
And it is a very peacemaking, very loving way that we operate. I know Stacy likes it, and Lou, and I know my wife and daughter and my son and our grandchildren, they like it too. It's very peaceful. I can go just about anywhere, California, and people look at me and they go, don't mess with him. He just has, you know, I know that's how Larry Wick is, that's how Dutch is, and that's how it should be. Jesus Christ did not walk around as a transvestite. He walked around like a block of granite.
He was a roofer.
He set his face like a flint.
Yeah.
Like the head of an arrow towards Jerusalem.
He drove wooden pegs, you know.
Weasels.
Yeah. You know, I get so sick of that, the Christian attitude that you must be meek like sheep. It's like, no, that's not in the Bible. Hey,
Yeah, you show up in front of a Muslim like a weasel and he'll pound you. But if you show up in front of a Muslim like a man's man, he'll leave you alone. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I want to shift and just get your opinion on this. That Florida minister, I think his name is Jones, isn't it, that went to Dearborn, Michigan, and he's burning the Koran, and they threw him in jail. They told him he had to pay a huge insurance.
$1?
Yeah, you know, or something to get $1 million of insurance and all this stuff, and he's going to go ahead. What do you think? Now, granted, he's not following the Code 20 moves about it. I've sent him the information for the last 2 months trying to get him to.
No, that's fine. I like what he's doing. A lot of it is just like a recon by force, and you have to expose the enemy, and you're seeing how the enemy works. It's waking up Americans. waking. So, yeah, I'm in there with him 100%. I'm not doing it myself because he's made himself the lightning rod. He's not perfect, but then is anybody perfect?
No.
Do we all make mistakes? Yeah, I think so. I like what he's doing because it's exposing. It's wicked. It destroys the First Amendment. And remember, the reason we do this, the reason we started, was Romans 10:13. Call upon the name of the Lord and you will be saved. How you will be saved except... And how will you get a preacher? That's where we started off originally, was going out and suing jurisdictions over the First Amendment. So I am with Pastor Jones. And if you don't, hey, you know what? It's called America.
Yeah, go another way. You can always find another way to do it. You know, you don't have to agree with every prong in the attack. You find what you can do. And if your way is just handing out flyers, you know, at some event like Earth Day, and you don't want to get confrontational, do that. Now, didn't you guys show up at Earth Day and the Wahhabis weren't there?
Yeah, our philosophy on the Wahhabis is just like Nehemiah standing on the gates and the walls of Jerusalem before the Arabians, and just like peacemakers, and we more if they, because they're so used to overwhelming the Christians, and the Christians bow down and grovel like a dog, and we tell them, look, we bow only before the Lord Jesus. We are not bowing before you. And they look at us like, what? You cannot do that. This day, the Lamb of God fulfilled the prophecies. He was slaughtered, fulfilling prophecy. He is no longer the Lamb of God. He is the Lion of Judah.
That's right.
The enemies who led the Lamb of God to the slaughter, the Lion of Judah, will lead those enemies to the slaughter. We stand here to protect the church. We stand here to protect our family in accordance with the two great commandments, in accordance with love is the fulfilling of all law. No, you will not win. You serve Satan. We will not back down. We will not shut up. You can do whatever you want. But and so what it does is it sends a gigantic signal, not only to the Muslims, but the New Agers, the commies, and all the rest of them. And they all say, we never saw anybody do this. Well, I just say, why don't you read the Bible? Why don't you just see the guy that said his face like a flint towards Jerusalem and he wouldn't back down. The Lamb of God was slaughtered. He fulfilled 300 and some odd prophecies. He's no longer the Lamb of God. He's now King of Kings.
That part's done.
Who's going to lead him back to the cross? Who's going to spit on him?
Yeah.
Who's going to beat him up? Who's going to illegally try him? Ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
And the church should act the same way. We do it in accordance with love. If they treat us nice, we shut up. If they try to assault us, it's game over. So we have chased the Wahhabi terrorists out of Earth Fair 2 years in a row because of cardinal sin for them. If they're embarrassed in public, then what they do is they flee and wait for another day, their own form of Code 20. So now they cannot come and lie. They can't spread their evil, wicked nonsense. They cannot intimidate because we chase them away. And I believe that's a very loving thing to do, and I believe we have fulfilled the scriptures.
Right. Speaking of, the den of vipers crucifying our Lord, wasn't Janet Napolitano in L.A. today? I like that segue.
Yeah, the Dick Viper, the Women's League of Vipers, the Viper in charge, she's got this insane thing called If You See, Then Just Say. And it's kind of a form of Code 20, except, of course, what they're looking for is Dutch Jones and myself. And, frankly, that's why I stay away from those guys.
Yeah.
So I just stay away from them. They know who Dutch and I are, and I know we're being monitored, but everything we say is in accordance with the laws of the land, and then if they overstep their boundaries, then we will, you know, sue them in court. And if they go too far, then I'm not going to bow down anymore, you know. I'm just not. I know Dutch is not, Pastor Warren's not, and I know a lot of you, too, are not going to do it. And that's the peacemaker idea. Janet Napolitano and the rest of the people, for however long they're in office, they're you know, the rattlesnake that says, don't tread on me, is a form of love fulfills the law, because you're sending a signal, don't bother me. I'm not going to bother you. It's the golden rule.
That's
love
exactly
fulfills
right.
all the law, the two great commandments. It's the negative golden rule. Learning Larry Wick's training, that if one punk gets taken out and there's 10 or 15 more, they're going to go, I'm not going to do this anymore.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
If we want, we can give them gospel tracts at that time. No problem.
You know, that's the cool thing about it is once you've submitted your enemy and he's now your ward, you know, or even your slave, depending on the rules of combat that you're operating under, you can share the gospel with him. And like one of the things I said to that Arab threat today, you know, I said, after we kill all of your men that come over here to kill us, we're going to proselytize to your children and convert them to the ways of Jesus Christ. That really made him mad.
Yeah, under biblical rules of warfare, we'll turn your survivors into slaves.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not man-stealing. It's the rules of war under biblical warfare.
That's right. They came over here. Yeah. They came over here. You got a choice. You can continue to assault the position and we'll kill you, or you can become a slave, or you can flee. Your choice. What do you want to do?
Yeah, exactly. And the weird thing to me is, well, it's not really weird. I kind of expect it from our government now because they've forgotten the days of when this nation was founded. You know, just the open arms way in which they encourage them to come. I mean, part of your presentation, you show that the CIA, FBI, DOJ, they're all actively recruiting these people. And at the same time, the DOJ is showing up at Code 20 soldiers' houses and taking their guns. But yet they're letting Muslims be hired.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and we've actually we've had great success recruiting, and we have a lot of good things going on down here. We listened to you very carefully when you did your training up there, and so we picked two different places to go to. I'm mm-hmm. not going to say them over the air.
Yeah, I don't.
But we're all worked together, and we got everything all set up. It's working good.
Uh-oh, it sounds like they found you.
I'm just sitting here in a parking lot. If I go any further south, I'll get about a 10-mile bad cell, so I just pulled over until the show's over.
Oh, well, I appreciate
that.
We've only got about 20 more minutes, just so you know. So, but we didn't take a break because you were on a roll, and I didn't want to interrupt, and I want to keep going here.
Yeah, no problem.
That was one of the things that we covered in the last Code 20 training was the bug-out philosophy, and you just brought it up that you have to have a couple fallbacks and things like that. As we build these networks across the United States, I mean, we had it was like Missouri, a couple in Texas, there was a couple in Michigan groups that have, you know, contacted us. The more groups we have, the more fallback places we'll have, and we'll know we're going to places where they think like us. And that's where this networking is key. And with this conference coming up, I've already had some contacts from people out of the state going, we'd like to be there in October for this training. And even though it's California and it's going to be a hardship to get here, especially when gasoline's $8 a gallon in October, but it's something that people need to do. If you can only send one person or a couple, you know, one family, send one family to the training and they each carry a video camera or something and get the training and bring it back. That's what you need to do. And then you guys should host a training. You guys host a training in winter, say you southern states, where it's, you know, we could go down to Georgia in, you know, in January or something. We'll send one family to your group if you're doing the right kind of training, and we'll bring some training with us. Yeah,
great idea.
You know, as we network, we'd like to do these training. Well, we already do the trainings every month already, and we'll get 30 people to these things. I do my training every month for disaster preparedness, which goes hand in hand, and I'll get anywhere from 21 month to 40 the next. We need to see more of this. We need to be abiding in each other's outreaches, is the way I'm putting it. And here at the Church of Korea, Steve said it earlier, it's almost like we're a little Switzerland. You can't get at us unless we let you get at us. And we've got the training facilities. We've got the mountains. I told you guys about the caves that are around us. I found one cave that we need to explore that is just amazing. I got to get my hiking ability up to get to it, but it's at the base of what's called Moro Rock. And it's clean air, clean water. You can't get to it without being seen. It's like a six-mile hike. And so we've got everything we need up there to put together a nice little stronghold. I don't call it that just to be cute. It's exactly what it is. And I'm hoping to see other groups doing this where they are. Because, you know, if Ohio sets off, I can't go fight in Ohio. This isn't like a jihad thing. We're responsible for our families, our kin, and our neighbors. The more strongholds we have all over the country, the better it's going to be. It'll be like Fort Apache. You know, we won't have to go all over the place looking for the cavalry because it'll be just the next town over.
That's exactly right. So you started talking about the invincible armor, the M1 Abrams, and then the different ways that you can take care of them. Just stay away from them. You know, you're afraid of rattlesnakes or black widows like my wife and Stacy, just stay away from them.
Yeah.
You know, if you see them, get out of there. Hey, I fought the Viet Cong, and I know that you were down there in Colombia taking on some of the bad guys.
America.
And, you know, it's so easy to avoid a tank. It's pretty easy to avoid most helicopters because you hear them thump, 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 thump.
Miles
from so
away.
Long. Yeah, just you get down, you hunker down, and you just disappear. And once again, there's 330-some-odd million people in the United States. The military bases are going to be all overwhelmed. The police and sheriffs are going to be all overwhelmed. I don't even really factor that in. What I factor in, number one, is the networking, you know, or the theology, and then the 3 to 5 families. Create your own government based on the Mayflower Compact, Declaration of Independence, Article 1, 3, and 6 of the Northwest Ordinance, and then the Constitution of the United States. And you just create your own government. A lot of people don't think of that, but that's really what we're doing, and that's in the Declaration of Independence. It's in Federalist Paper number 78. It's understood in the Constitution because you amend the Constitution, which prevents revolution and things of that nature. So you got to have that government, and then, of course, you prepare. So right now, all the stuff we're doing down here, we have a nice, good group. Dutch Jones and the Church of Cahuilla has a nice group. A couple of other places, Oakland and the Santa Barbara area, are creating their own groups. And I know that in Missouri and in Ohio, Wisconsin, Idaho, they have their own groups. And I know they're all over the United States. And now I'm just really pleased with what Dutch has done, linking up with all these different defense leagues, international defense leagues. And that goes back to Islam is only 1/4 of the whole world. We got 75% to draw from. And what's interesting also, in that video that Peter Hammond did, remember the Muslims per host country and how they behave?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the world's at approximately 25% is Islam, and the Muslims are attacking everybody, which is proof positive. When they reach 20 to 25%, it's open warfare against everybody. So there's 25% of the global population is Muslim, and the Muslims are at war against everybody.
Yeah, it's exactly right. And it seems more people are waking up to it. You said something, you know, there aren't enough police and military. Even if they bring in UN troops, they're going to be bringing in African and South American troops.
UN troops?
Yeah.
Come on, dude, get serious.
Yeah.
You're going to bring in... I don't know why people could bring... We are the UN.
Yeah.
We are the...
But they're going to be like 4 guys from Poland. It's going to be like
Come
the coalitions
on.
They always put together, you know? It'll be like, yes, we have a coalition of 200 countries. Yeah, but that's only 36 people from 200 countries. And
pardon me for laughing.
That's okay, but that's the way it goes.
How many people got guns in the United States? 30, 35, 40 million people?
Oh, it's probably...
All of the UN together, they got a couple of bows and arrows, a couple of spears, they got some witch doctors for their MDs. Come on, dude, get serious.
We'll see Haitians coming in, we'll see, you know, it's like they're talking about, you know, there'll be some guys from Mexico, but the key thing is that the good cops and the good soldiers are going to go, no way, man, and they're going to go looking for
Absolutely.
The strongholds. And they're gonna.
Absolutely.
We've already seen it with the soldiers, haven't we? With the Oath Keepers and the folks we've been training with, they already know what the writing's on the wall, and they're already making, you know, allegiances with us because they need us. They need us just as much as we would embrace them.
The young active duty guys are—they're not formally networked, but rest assured, they are very networked. And I'm not gonna say too much except I'm in touch. I'm not gonna identify states and whatnot, but it's a very big state, and they are very heavily armed, and they are very experienced combat frontline warriors, and they're very much waiting, just watching.
Yeah, it's amazing to me how many people, you know, they're all worried about, oh, it's going to be a big police state. Sure, we won't be able to go to Disneyland whenever we want, but we're going to hold huge tracts of land. And I think it was Mark Kornke on one show a long time ago, I think it was a year or so ago, said, you're going to see whole divisions going the way of the Constitution and not doing what the evil newers are saying. So you're going to have tank division. You'll have a Federalist tank division against a constitutional tank division, is the best way I can put it. And we won't even be involved in that. We won't be involved in that.
Right.
There'll be nothing for us to do except maybe be shore watchers for them and give them some intel. And when when the good guys come up here to rout out all the UN troops that are living in the Sequoia National Park, we'll show them the road. We'll go, yeah, follow us. We'll show you where they're all camping up here. You guys go take them out. You know, and that's what I see us wanting to do.
Well, you stop and consider most of the UN troops don't speak English.
Yeah.
And they don't know the land. They're lost. They're lost little lambs. They don't stand a chance. I went to jump school when I was an officer in Fort Benning, 1975. It was the first time I saw, in the United States, foreign officers, and they were in the mess hall and stuff, and they were from all over the world. But I remember watching one guy. He didn't know how to use his knife, fork, and spoon, and he was trying to eat peas with his knife. And I remember we were young, and we were just laughing at this poor guy. But there was only 150 to 200 of them.
Yeah.
And then they would go back to their homeland where gasoline was like the national treasure. They just didn't have the stuff. I mean...
Yeah.
But I have no respect for the UN, zero. Oh, no. I have no respect for the Soviet bloc countries and the CHICOMs. Their logistics are, having seen them in firsthand, their failure rate is so abysmal.
Well, that's why they have to do human swarms. It's their only possible gamble is just, well, let's just throw a lot of bodies at them because, you know, we can't do anything else.
They're not going to do human swarms in the United States.
Yeah, well, they can't get them over. There isn't enough of a navy to get them all here. They could come across through Alaska or something. We could get some really cool scenario. Although
Larry Wood will take them all out.
Yeah, he's up in Alaska with those guys. And the guys from different militias, from MOM are up there. You know, the militia Montana are up there now. But the one thing that's funny is, I don't know if you're aware of this, the movie Red Dawn, remember the original movie? Well, they made a sequel, not a sequel, and they made the Chinese the bad guys. MGM was making the movie. Well, MGM was going bankrupt, and a Chinese investor came in and bailed them out. Now they're not. They didn't release the movie. They're digitally switching all of the Chinese to North Koreans, so the Chinese won't get a bad rap. I was talking to the producer of it the other day because I'm trying to get him to come on, and he's too embarrassed. I was emailing him. And so
you
talk about, you know, the whole PC movement. We can't even have bad Chinese people in our movies now. They have to be North Korean. So they're throwing their little cousins to the south of them under the bus to be the bad guys. So I don't know when the movie's coming out now because of that. But it was filmed in California and in Detroit. So I'm looking forward to it where the youth come out and fight the Chinese. It's going to have some good messages to it, I think, if it's anything like the original. I don't even care if it's poorly acted. I just like the idea of it, of, you know, teenagers with deer rifles taking on, you know, CHICOMs. And even though they're going to change it to North Koreans, we're going to know it was originally the Chinese anyway, because, you know, I'm going to make sure everybody knows. Those are really Chinese. Those aren't North Koreans.
I'm sorry. What's just so funny to me is watching, I think I shared this with you before when I was a brand new lieutenant after being enlisted for a number of years and after 240 ambushes. So I was pretty experienced, but I remember watching 60 Minutes did a deal on the Soviet bloc. They had like 300,000 tanks, and at that time, I think we had about 220,000 Marines, and all of us officers looked at each other, and they were showing them on their maneuvers in Ukraine, and then as I got more experienced and did battle planning, I said, the Three Stooges, and they wanted to go to Cairo, so they catch a taxi cab, and they go across the Atlantic and the Mediterranean Ocean in a taxi cab, and they end up in Cairo, you know, and they pay the cab driver, whatever it was. It's the same thing. How are the red Chinese and these other dudes, the Russians, going to get all their tanks and everything over here? I understand they have a large navy, but I also understand that their logistics is so poor that they could get maybe 10% of their vessels, and our few aircraft carriers that we have would take them out in a heartbeat. So, once again, that's told one guy, I said, I'm more worried about the Ethiopians, their mighty Ethiopian army and navy taking us over than the Red Chinese. And I explained to him the logistical problem. So the science of logistics.
Wow. What was that, low-flying aircraft?
Yeah, it's a Harley. I'm on almost like a freeway here parked over doing the show.
Okay.
The science of logistics is much more important than the Green Beret training, the Ranger training, the Recon training. The science of logistics is so critical because you're not going to get your Green Berets, you're not going to get your division of infantry, your division of tanks, or your division of helicopters without the science of logistics. Look at World War II. We fought two wars across two oceans. Our logistics is just way off the charts, truly, truly elite. And most of your armchair quarterbacks, they look at the Green Berets and the Recon and the SEALs, and they go, wow, they're so good. It's like, their numbers are so few, don't even factor them in. They're not going to do anything.
Yeah, yeah. You know, they would be better served on our side organizing the civilian population to defend.
Absolutely.
You know,
the Green Berets, the SEALs, and the Recon don't have the logistical training.
Yeah.
They're good in their physical fitness and their map reading and cutting people's throats. But they, seriously, they're not going to get 5,000 men, 10,000 miles, and kill 100,000 people. They're not trained to do that. They're trained to be taken in billion-dollar systems and let off and do their thing. But it's the stuff that Dutch and I are training, the networking overcomes all of those logistical problems.
Yeah, and that's the key. And it's like I said in my first hour, that these guys depend heavily on battery-operated technical stuff that feeds them information.
Yeah.
What's the word now? I can't remember. Combined force operations. You know, the satellite feeding them instantly what they need to know.
Exactly.
They can call for fire. They can have a unmanned drone fly over and give them, you know, everything they need to know. But the minute they run out of batteries, the minute they don't have that communication link, they're no better than Robert's Rangers in 1775. You know, that's it.
Exactly right.
You know, they're going to have what's on their back, and that's it.
And when they run out of bullets, they're going to be looking around like, where's Larry Wick?
Yeah, exactly. And that's another thing.
Put in a plug, man. Put in a plug for Larry.
Well, May 20th, 21st, and 22nd, that's a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, coming up real quick here. It's $150 for 2.5 days of unarmed self-defense like you've never seen before. Go to Split Second Survival, splitsecondsurvival.com, splitsecondsurvival.com, Split Second Survival. This guy teaches 100-pound female cops how to take on, you know, 300-pound gorillas and make them cry for mercy. Not the girl, the gorilla. But it's all in, like he put it on the phone to me the other day, it's what to do when you screwed up. You don't have your gun, you don't have your knife, you don't have your baton, you don't have a taser or pepper spray. You screwed up, you're in the alley, you have multiple attackers, how are you going to get out alive? A decision whether or not you're going to kill the guys, we'll leave that up to you, but it will teach you to hurt them so bad they have to disengage. It's not about being boisterous, being manly, you know, looking like Bruce Lee. It's about split second doing the most damage with the least amount of movement, using a pen or a comb or your not even a closed fist. There's no kicking, there's no throws. It's all just going after the eyes or the testicles of the head, Lou? Is that what we came up with? And the throat or the testicles of the head, that kind of thing. And it's real simple, straightforward. And this is the basic intro class. The stuff is so violent, he can't make a video of it. His lawyers won't let him do it because he's also a MMA trainer. He's also a like 12th degree Fu Manchu. What does he do, Lou?
Tang Sudo,
whatever it's called. It sounds like Chinese food to me. I don't get into the Asian martial arts. I like Krav Maga and
Feng Shui.
Not Feng Shui. I don't. But that's he comes in and he teaches soldiers to fight with their gear on. He says all the stuff they're teaching them, you know, in the gym with their sweats on. He goes, it's a joke. What are you gonna do when you're wearing a full, you know, complement of gear, 200 rounds, your weapons hanging around you, and some guy goes, what are you gonna do? That's what he does. Yep. In fact, our soldiers that are taking the class, he wants to – so, like, he's going to be here Thursday, and I think if we can get our soldiers up here Thursday night, he wants to spend time with just them because he wants to give them a different paradigm because he says, I'm going to teach the soldiers to kill everything in sight. He goes, they have a different mission in the world. He goes, but the little old ladies and stuff that are taking the class and the teenage girls, he goes, I'm going to teach them how to, you know, stop a date rape or stop a burglar, you know, a burglar coming in the house and wound them really bad, and then they can make the decision if they want to mortally wound them. It's just cool. Like everything else with deadly force. You get to decide at that moment depending on how you know, much force you think the other guy's using. As for my family, we're just going to teach them how to kill. So it just, you know, it's going to be clean and easy.
Get it over with.
You know, what decision? There is no decision. That guy made the decision when he entered our house. That guy made the decision when he pointed a gun at me. We had a situation the other day. We were doing the child exchange with our daughter's birth mother, and we were in the middle of Fresno somewhere, and there were maniacs coming out of everywhere. We got there a little early to the rally point. It's just like, you know, an aggressive panhandler. And, you know, Lou and I were ready. I'm like, he makes one wrong move, he's going to walk away from here bleeding. And I didn't even have to worry about shooting him. I didn't have to worry. You know, I had my pen in my hand, and Lou's got his knife out, and Stacy's yelling at the guy. I'm like, there's no reason to yell at him. If he does anything stupid, we'll just kill him. Yeah, I know he was scary, but then my ex gets there.
He's not as scary as Dutch and Lou.
Yeah,
Dutch
I know.
And Lou are a lot scarier.
I tried to say, you know, just be calm. Just look the guy in the eye and tell him to leave, you know. But when my ex-wife got there, she had her stepson with her, and we picked up my daughter, and I go, what are you guys doing? They go, oh, we're going to walk over to Taco Bell. I said, you're going to stay in this area that you picked. I said, see that guy over there? I said, he's already aggressively panhandled me, and he's already on, you know. I said, there's absolutely no reason for you to stay. She goes, oh, well, you're always worried about everything. And I said, okay, your life and the life of that boy mean nothing to me anymore anyway. I don't even know who that kid is. If you want to stay here, stay here. I'm leaving. And she got in her car and left. But it's just the sheep attitude. It's like, and I tell people, I'm not a sheep. I'm a sheepdog. But I'm only going to protect those sheep that'll do what I tell them to do. You know, if somebody, you know, I'm not Jesus Christ. I'm not going to leave the flock to go find one guy, you know, unless it's my loved one. But, wow, the music's playing already, Steve. I want to thank you for calling in. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you. You
be safe down there in L.A. You're probably safer in Vietnam than you are right now down there in L.A. right now.
I think so. Yeah, you bet.
Folks, you've been listening to Stronghold Radio. We've been talking Code 20 Cell Warfare with Steve Klein. If you like anything you heard here today, you want to hear more, email me at dutchjones@dutchjones.info. Dutch@dutchjones.info. Make sure you spell Jones, J-O-E-N. If you're going to send me hate mail, please do it in English. I hate taking the time to translate it. Remember, you can hear the archive. Olimaw's taking the time to put the archive up if you missed any of this. I want to thank Scotty38 for rebroadcasting. Especially want to thank Liberty Tree Radio, the Kornkey folks up there, Ed Kornkey specifically, for rebroadcasting what we have to put out. Tune in Thursday if you don't want to listen to me tomorrow. Tune in Thursday for Pastor Warren Mark Campbell with Practical Christianity. And remember, the sword is heavy, the battle is hard. Victory does belong to the Lord, but he's asking you to stand in the gap. He's putting out a clarion call to you. So where are you going to be when Jesus comes back? Is this where you're in the basement? Or standing in the doorway with a sword in one hand and defiant against the enemies of Christ? So folks, hang in there, and God bless you in all you do in the holy cause of liberty.